To maths now, and last week one of the world's leading mathematics awards, the Arbel Prize, was given to Oxford University's Andrew Wiles for solving the 350-year-old puzzle posed by the French lawyer and mathematician Pierre de Lefermat. Our reporter, Timothy Revel, was at the ceremony in Oslo, Norway, to soak up the mathmosphere.
Did you know there's no Nobel Prize for mathematics? Well, every mathematician does, and they're pretty sure they know why.
Nobel's wife ran off with the mathematician.
Nobel's wife had an affair with a mathematician?
I heard this story from so many different sources while studying for my degree in maths that I was convinced that it just had to be true. But when I looked it up, it turned out that Nobel didn't even have a wife.
The truth is, Nobel just wasn't really interested in mathematics. He didn't believe, as he should have done, that mathematics was a fundamentally important field for mankind.
Which means in maths, instead of the Nobel Prize, there's the Arbel Prize, named after the Norwegian 19th century mathematician Niels Heinrich Arbel, which was awarded last week.
As the president of the Norwegian Academy of Science and Letters, it's my pleasure and privilege to announce the winner of the Arbel Prize 2016, till Sir Andrew Wiles.
Last week, some of the greatest mathematicians from around the world gathered in Oslo to celebrate this year's Arbel Prize winner. There was a serious buzz, the champagne flowed, and even the Norwegian Crown Prince attended. And whilst I was there, I bumped into author Simon Singh to find out why Sir Andrew Wiles was getting this year's prize.
350 years ago, Pierre de Fermat said he could prove that this equation had no solutions, but he never told us what that proof was. It's like having a buried treasure. Somebody says they buried the treasure somewhere, but they're not telling you where the treasure is. And so every other mathematician in the world has been treasure hunting, has been looking for this proof, trying to rediscover what Fermat said he had all those centuries ago.
Pierre de Fermat was a French mathematician who in the 17th century was working through his favourite maths book when he started to think about square numbers and how to split them up. 25 is a square number, he thought, because it's 5 times 5, but 25 can also be split up into two smaller square numbers, 16, which is 4 squared, and 9, which is 3 squared, which when added together give back 25. Carrying on this thought, Fermat wondered if cube numbers could be split into two cubes, or fourth powers split into two other fourth powers, but he could never find an example. Instead, he declared that for anything higher than squares, this type of number split was impossible. But then, he died, and his proof was never found and proved pretty difficult to reconstruct.
Every century, mathematicians tried to prove Fermat's last theorem, and every century they failed. And the more they failed, the more of a precious problem this became. But still, nobody could find a proof until Andrew Wiles came along. He was one of the few people in the world who had the audacity to think he could even try to prove Fermat's last theorem.
I'm Andrew Wiles. I'm professor at Oxford, the Royal Society research professor. So when I was a 10-year-old, I was visiting a public library in Cambridge and just rummaging along the math shelf, and I came across this book by E.T. Bell, and on the cover it described this problem, and so I spent my teenage years trying to solve it and actually had to stop myself when I became a professional mathematician and realized that the methods available at that time had really got nowhere for 100 years, so it would have been rather arrogant to devote too much time to it as a professional mathematician.
But then, the game changed. Mathematicians proved that there was a completely new way to tackle Fermat's last theorem by connecting it to another completely different unsolved problem. The new mathematics said that anyone that could solve this new problem would solve Fermat's last theorem as well.
The moment I heard about that, I remember exactly where I was. I was having tea somewhere and someone told me about this and I was in shock, and immediately I started working on the problem. I believed I could solve it, but possibly not in my lifetime.
Wiles then withdrew from the mathematical community, opting to work secretly, completely alone, for over 7 years, toiling away until he eventually solved Fermat's last theorem, once and for all. He felt elated, but also a certain sense of sadness for his mathematical quest being over.
I have to say there's a tiny feeling of losing something. It'd been a very private enterprise, and once you share it with the world, you're sharing it. And it had been my non-stop companion for years by this point, and now I was passing it on.
Once Wiles shared his proof with the world, he shot to fame and was even offered a modelling contract as well as having a musical written about him. Not bad for just proving a theorem. Wiles has received a lot of prizes for his mathematics over the years, and now he can add an Arbel Prize to his trophy cabinet as well.
It is a pleasure to express my deep gratitude to the Norwegian Academy of Science and Letters and to the Arbel Committee for awarding me this prize. Thank you.
That was Timothy Revell reporting from Oslo.
This is The Naked Scientist with me, Chris Smith, and with Connie Orbach. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, it's chris@thenakedscientist.com. You can also find us on Twitter, @NakedScientist. On to the main theme of the show this week now, and we're asking, what will your home look like in 2050?
With a growing global population, we're facing a considerable housing shortage, both in terms of numbers of houses and the quality of that housing. In fact, a 2014 report by the McKinsey Global Institute, or MGI, estimates that by 2025, 440 million urban households, or as many as 1.6 billion individuals worldwide, will face crowded, substandard housing. So we need to build more homes.
But in countries like the UK, about half of the population's carbon emissions come just from the buildings we inhabit. And to meet the demands of climate change obligations, we need to cut those emissions by 80%.
So, can we have sustainable housing that still meets the demands of a growing population?
Well, let's build from the bottom up and look at how we can lay the foundations for more sustainable housing.